Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome back to another episode of Three Guys Theologizing. We are glad that you have joined us on this episode. We're thankful for our listeners, and we are glad to be able to have you join along with us in this conversation. This is Barry York, one of the co-hosts of 3GT. I serve as president, as well as professor of pastoral theology and homiletics at the Reformed Presbyterian Theological Seminary in Pittsburgh. I'm joined along with Scott Hunt, our prosecuting attorney and ruling elder from Marion, Indiana, where he serves in the Reformed Presbyterian Church there. And Scott, I'm coming out to see you a day after this is recorded to celebrate your 10th anniversary. So looking forward to seeing you in person and not just online.
Yeah, me too. And are you bringing your lovely wife with you?
My lovely wife is coming along, so we're looking forward to seeing the saints there. As we remember,
we can't wait.
Faithfulness, yes. And we're also
what is the official date of Marion's 10th anniversary?
Today, September. Yeah, if we can say it, it's September 11th.
Okay.
Of 2015 is when we were organized as a congregation.
Yep, that's really cute. 10 years. On Monday, right. Winchester celebrated 157 years. So,
wow.
Well, we like our younger.
Remember children. Who's serving the oldest institution among us. And of course, you recognize the voice of Kyle Borg, a pastor of the Winchester Reformed Presbyterian Church in Kansas. So, guys, we're glad to be together. To be honest, my heart's heavy. I'm sure your guys' are as well. Not only is this the day that our country remembers now the 24th anniversary of 9/11, when the terrorists attacked those Twin Towers in New York and the Pentagon, another plane went down in my state of Pennsylvania. So we were already thinking about that. I already had a few times of prayer scheduled, one with the church, one with the seminary today, just to remember that occasion and pray for our nation. But yesterday, something tragic happened as well, as the political activist and Christian apologist Charlie Kirk lost his life in an event on, I think it was Utah Valley University's campus in Utah. And so that's really fresh and raw right now as we're recording this. So our listeners may notice a little bit of absence of our normal banter, and it's partly because of just the heaviness on our hearts. And we thought it would be good to go ahead and just talk about this a little bit, have a discussion, process this event. We're not here to necessarily talk politics, although I'm sure that will come up, but really remember that this was a man that professed faith in Christ. And so we've lost a brother in the faith. He's left behind his wife, Erica, as well as two young children. And so there's a widow and fatherless children in the follow-up of this event. So it does weigh our hearts down. But let's talk a bit about this and, in a sense, process it together. We've had a little bit of off-air discussion to think through it, and we decided to bring it on air. I guess one of the questions that comes to my mind in light of just all the reports coming out, and again, as we're recording this, we know there was a shooter. It seems like there's some initial identification of him. We're not sure if he's been captured yet. It's still all unfolding as we record. So I'm sure when you listen to this, there'll be much more that comes out. And again, what we're trying to process is really a follow-up to our last episode. In our last episode called Honoring One Another, we recorded that after some major evangelicals such as John MacArthur, James Dobson, some others I think we might have mentioned, had passed away in more natural ways. And we talked about the tributes that were rolling out, the criticisms, and we sort of talked about the importance of honoring God's people and the proper and improper ways of doing that. And there's a sense in which we're seeking to do that here in this episode, sort of as a follow-up. And I don't want to call it a case study because we don't want to make a case of this, but just personalize it a little bit as we think about what's happened to Mr. Kirk. And I guess one of the first questions that comes to my mind, having heard a lot of different descriptions of what this event actually was, on the one hand, I've heard people call it a political assassination. I hear other people using the word martyr and referring to Charlie. And so I just wondered what your guys' thoughts were about that as you think about those terms or maybe something else that you would call this event. How do you understand what happened in this event, and I guess in a bigger picture, bigger scale?
I mean, it's hard to, in one sense, in this case, distinguish the two, because while I was not a huge follower of Charlie Kirk, I didn't, you know, listen to podcasts or go out of my way to, you know, watch him or anything. I was very familiar with what he had done, what his goal was. And in a lot of ways, he became, toward the end of his life, particularly, much more outspoken about his Christian faith. And, you know, there's been posts of him talking a couple months ago about what does he want to be remembered for, and that he was strong in his faith. I can't remember his exact words, but that he lived for God, lived for his faith. And he named Jesus Christ very, very clearly. And I think, you know, my mind goes to that passage of Scripture, if they hate you, know that they hated me first. And so I think a lot of hatred came toward Charlie Kirk because of his profession of faith. Now, granted, there was some political stuff. Obviously, he was known more, I think, for his political argumentation necessarily than his Christian positions. But, you know, in one sense, and I may offend some people here, but leftist ideology is religious in nature. And I don't think we can, and I'm not saying the Democrat Party is religious in nature. What I'm saying is the leftist ideology, Marxist ideology, socialist ideology is religious at its core. And so when they were confronted with the truth of not only the politics of Charlie Kirk, but his Christianity and his unashamed Christianity, in my opinion, that's probably what sent them over the edge. And so I don't think it's wrong to call him either a political assassin or a martyr, because, I mean, the guy was a rising star in the conservative movement. Nobody can argue that. But I think he was even more so a proponent of Jesus Christ. And I don't want that to get lost in all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would tend to agree with Scott on that. You know, I guess there are some ways that you can distinguish and look at this from maybe what you would call two separate angles, but at the end of the day, I do see them as connected. You know, I think that, I mean, yesterday's news conference, right away when the Utah police gave their first update, you know, the spokesperson said that he wanted to be very clear, this was a political assassination. And so you do have the authorities verifying that, you know, and like Scott said, Charlie was well known for many political positions. And I think political positions where there is room at times for well-intentioned, even just Christians, to disagree with one another. You know, we might not all share the same view on certain political viewpoints that Charlie would have been very outspoken on. But at the same time, many of the things that Charlie was committed to, it wasn't merely what we might call those political issues that we can agree to disagree on. You know, he took exceedingly firm, courageous stances on things like pro-life and things like LGBTQ issues, transgendered identity, on Islam, and things like that. And for me, I guess, you know, as a Christian, those things transcend merely political questions, in the sense that there is definitive answers to those things. And, you know, when you watched Charlie interact with people on things like that, you know, I think in particular, a lot of his interactions on transgenderism, you know, yeah, he would make political arguments, but he would also very much ground these things in scripture. You know, unashamedly, at least in these last few years of his life, unashamedly saying, you know, for me as a Christian, here's what the Bible says. You know, often grounding both pro-life LGBTQ issues in the Imago Dei, which is very much a Christian bedrock of these things. And so, right, I guess my point is that there are political things, and you know, and we can agree to disagree on some of those things, you know, and there should be room for us to debate those. And, you know, not everybody's going to agree on issues, dare I say it, on Russia and Ukraine, or on, you know, whatever other hot political ideas are out there today. But Charlie didn't just speak clearly and confidently on those issues. He often spoke on issues that have very clearly spelled out in the scriptures. So I would see this as a bit of both. You know, I think as I reflected on it, and it, you know, of course, we're waiting on the investigation. We're waiting to find out what motive is and everything like that. But, you know, if the authorities are already confidently saying it was a political assassination, I guess I'm comfortable saying, in a very real sense, he is also a martyr, because, you know, he wasn't, from my perspective at this point, he wasn't just assassinated simply for exercising the right of free speech. He was killed because he's somebody who spoke the truth. And oftentimes that was biblical truth. And so I look at that and I say, you know, well done, good and faithful servant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really appreciate those answers. Yeah, I don't think we can deny that it was, first of all, a political assassination. I mean, he was there with his organization, Turning Point USA, and they're, you know, I've never, until this last day or so, been on their website. I was familiar with him through social media and watched clips and things, and maybe heard him on one podcast or something, but really wasn't following him much along the lines of Scott. But Turning Point's exist to really educate young people about the importance of limited government, free markets, freedom. So it was very much a political organization. Of course, it was often associated with the Republican Party or with President Trump. And so that brings a little bit of, for some people, the difficulty in separating him from the president. Although I thought, and sometimes when I heard him speak, he was pretty careful that he wanted not to be too associated with the president, but to merely point out that where he saw the principles of these principles being expressed through the president, he stood with that. But then, you know, on the other hand, the idea of being a martyr, we often associate it simply with those who die for their faith. But of course, the Bible says that anyone who is a witness, which is what the Greek word means, is being a martyr, although there's a special classification for those who die for their faith. And I think when we think of someone like a pastor or preacher out preaching, and then they're martyred, of course that's a martyr for the faith. But I think that any Christian who's out in their particular realm witnessing for Christ, which clearly he was doing, I think that classification is not a wrong one to say that he's a martyr. He was martyred for representing his faith in the public square. So I think that's important for us to just think through as we really see. And the other thing I really appreciated reading and helping me process this was a column by Al Mohler. I believe it was in World Magazine. And Mohler is familiar with him over the past decade. And one of the things Al Mohler was saying is that the Charlie Kirk that he met initially about a decade ago was different than the one that just passed away, because between those two points, he saw this more hard-nosed, argumentative type person become a Christian, become a husband, become a father, and he saw him then becoming a really faithful witness to Christ. Charlie Kirk would make as far as it was possible in all of his travels, seek to be back home so that he could be in church on the Lord's Day. And he didn't work on the Lord's Day. He honored it. And so he really honored the local church and his family he loved clearly. So I think we're seeing here a man that was in process. So maybe we can talk about that a little bit later. I did want to go into his influence and probably why Scott and I weren't as engaged with him might have something to do with our age. And Scott, you were talking to me earlier before we got online about your children. Could you just explain that? And then let's talk a little bit about his influence on this generation.
Sure. So I found out about this. I was in a meeting with, you know, several people yesterday afternoon, and I get a text from my son, Colin, and he said, the text was, they shot Charlie Kirk. And that's all. And so providentially, I'm sitting right next to Jason Camry in this meeting. And so I kind of turn to Jason and we start talking. He's like, yeah, Megan. So Megan's his daughter, who's, you know, a little bit older than my children, but still of that generation. And yeah, she's been texting me. And then all of a sudden, my phone starts blowing up in the family chat with all four of my children chiming in. And, you know, they were influenced very greatly in their thought process and thinking through things by Charlie Kirk. So much so that it was hard. I mean, last night, just sitting down and talking with, you know, my one son's in St. Louis now, so I didn't get a chance to talk to him face to face. But, you know, I will tell you this, my boys were angry. They were sad too, but they were angry that this was done. And so to harken back, they saw it more as a martyr. They viewed Charlie Kirk as a Christian. They've told me in the past, you know, we don't agree with him on certain things in his Christianity, but doggone it, he was a Christian. He was a faithful man. And so my boys were angry and my daughters were crushed in their spirit, probably for what you would think daughters would be crushed in their spirit for, is because he's a husband. He's a father and his poor wife, and he wasn't doing anything wrong. He was just out there talking. Why would somebody do this? So Charlie Kirk had a profound impact on people of my children's age. Gen Z, I think, is probably what they're considered. An effect more profound than I think most of us can, of my generation, can appreciate. But it was... The influence was not just political, but it was spiritual as well, and it emboldened my kids to stand up and take a stand. You know, they wear pro-life shirts, and they espouse Christianity in a lot bolder way because of what they saw people like Charlie Kirk doing. Oh. So his influence was very profound in the young people's lives.
Yeah, I think, I mean, my kids are not of the age where they're listening to Charlie Kirk. So, but, you know, to just, I think, you know, Scott is explaining something within the confines of his own household that I just think is basically universally true. You know, I remember yesterday, Aaron Wren posted pretty quickly after the assassination, and he said, you know, people don't actually realize how big Turning Point USA is, and that if you just look at their budget numbers, you know, they're comparable to Heritage, and that this is, you know, Charlie Kirk's organization is probably one of, if not the most important conservative political organization in the country. And, you know, his influence over Gen Z is phenomenal. You know, I also saw, and I thought it was a good reflection, a college professor said, you know, even the elite evangelical college professors seem completely out of tune with how influential Charlie Kirk was and is to the students that they teach. And you know, you really can't, in a sense, and you know, I don't think this is just hagiography, you can't overestimate the influence that he's had on a younger generation. He has done a tremendous amount.
When you watch him and see him, like, how do you think he was able to do that? Because we think about the world, and, you know, I've been referencing the great exodus, the great dechurching in America, and you know, the nuns, the non-religious, that's the fastest growing section of our population, that type of thing. How do you see that Charlie Kirk was able to connect with so many students? I mean, even this rally where he was shot, I mean, there were thousands of people just from evidence of the pictures. And that was common, I think, as he showed up not only on a, well, it was, you know, Mormon territory, so that might explain some of it there, but even on secular campuses, truly secular campuses, he might even have more people come out. So what do you think, what do you see as you saw him interacting, maybe read something from him? Why was he able to connect so well with this younger generation?
I think in part it's because he was willing to go where a lot of people aren't willing to go. He didn't just sit in an ivory tower behind a microphone doing a podcast like Three Guys Theologizing. It wasn't an ivory tower. He happily went into the lion's den, and by that, you know, he happily went into the indoctrination zones of our nation, which is the higher educational institutions. You know, Turning Point was always found on college campuses, and he didn't shy from it. He didn't. And I think his ability to do the impromptu questions and answers, I think I'm not an expert on Gen Z. I won't pretend to be, but there is an authenticity to that. Mm-hmm. You know, sure, as a Christian, I'm sure James 3 at times, hopefully weighed heavily on him that we all sin in many ways and we need to learn to tame the tongue. And yet there's something exceedingly commendable in doing impromptu questions and answers and engaging people. And, you know, I know that the truth is going to infuriate the people who most opposed him. And you know, people would probably just brush me aside as kind of some kind of bias. But when you watch the videos, very respectfully dialoguing with people. Now, that doesn't mean he wasn't courageous or blunt and frank with the truth at times, especially when he dealt with transgendered identities and pronouns and things like that. But in the impromptu questions and answers, you know, he did listen. He listened and he responded thoughtfully. And I think that probably, that has a profound effect. So that's one of the reasons I would say is he didn't sit in the ivory tower and he was willing to go into the lion's den of indoctrination zones.
Yeah. And I think both of those are very, very accurate reasons why he had such a profound impact. But I also think he was willing to say the hard things when, you know, it's very easy to, when you get in those situations, to water down the truth, to change your message, and he didn't. And I think the reason he had such a profound impact to get back to that is, you know, he was a voice of a people who didn't feel like they had a voice. You know, one, you have these people who feel the same way about things, and now there's finally somebody who's able to say them articulately. We joke, Kyle, sometimes I'm just not nearly as articulate as I should be on 3GT. And you give me a hard time. You promise not to do that today. But when you have somebody who is like Charlie Kirk, who has the ability to say things in a way that are true, that are not unnecessarily harsh, in a way that speaks to people and really resonates with them. This is what I've been wanting to say, but I just haven't been able to say it. I think that's why he's had the profound impact that he has. Is it's not like he's saying things that other people didn't think or believe things that other people didn't believe, but he was able to speak those things in an articulate way, being a voice for people. And you know, microphone doesn't hurt, you know, being able to talk over people sometimes, you know, on college campuses, that's not always easy, but you know, he was able to do that and do it in a way that was winsome. Not always. And I'm sure there are videos that are out there where he wasn't winsome, or he may have said something that makes you cringe. But that's being human. By and large, his draw was his ability to connect through common thought and being able to dialogue with people in an articulate way. And I think that in my opinion, that's why he had such a profound impact.
But I think too, Scott, so yes, articulate, but I think people appreciate that. Like, oh, he's saying things the way that I wish I could say them. But I also think just an example of courage, right? Mm-hmm. Because again, he went into the indoctrination zones and he was called and labeled every negative name that you can be called today, you know, racist, misogynist, bigot, fascist, all of these things. And, you know, and there was a degree of courage to say, you know, and that, you know, we all inherently, we struggle with a fear of man. And it especially young people, it's very, very hard, not just especially young people, we all struggle with fear of man. And it can be very hard to overcome that. And you know, I think he was willing to speak his convictions, but then he was also willing to speak the truth, the objective truth, with courage, you know, come what may, whatever these people are going to label me or misconstrue me. And I think that is very influential with young people as well. Young people, I do think they want to see people who actually believe what they say they believe. And regardless of whether you always agreed with Charlie on some of the political issues, he always said what he believed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one of the key things. We had an episode number times ago about courage. I think it was after a conference you did with young people, Kyle, and you've mentioned that you saw a good response, the young people hungry for that and wanting help in that area to be courageous. And that's what I really admired about him. Again, I didn't always agree with everything, but sometimes I feel like we always have to qualify that. Like, whoever agrees with anyone all the time? My wife doesn't agree with me all the time. She loves me. You know, we don't have to. I always agree with her, though. No, anyway.
But, wow, Barry. Wow.
I have to. No, I'm just kidding. We can't always agree with everyone, but my goodness, you look at the clips, and this guy's without a college degree. He's standing in Cambridge in the paneled walls of Cambridge talking to students there and professors there. And he was a very self-educated man. Like he read 100 books a year. He was an incredible entrepreneur. He employed lots and lots of people in his organization. Obviously, he had to be very competent to manage all of that. And on top of it, he led by example. He went into these places and he could, if people didn't know things and yet made these statements against him, as a good Christian apologist would do, he would show their false presuppositions and their false knowledge. And a lot of times all he was doing was bringing truth to bear on a debate or on an argument. And one of the things I noticed about him is that he always seemed to be pretty self-controlled when he could have been very angry because people were mocking him and saying evil against him. And yet he would come back and he almost matched, you know, the level that people wanted to come at him. So if they wanted to, you know, say some things strongly to him, then he would, I don't think he yelled at anyone, but he would always like, oh, hold on a minute and really get their attention. So he was responding to what they were saying. I look at so much social media today, and it seems like it's just two ships passing in the night. They're not really engaged in true debate. They're just trying to one-up the other person with a position, and they're not really listening and engaging in discussion. And that's something I thought he was really good at, and what a lot of us, I believe, in the church are scared to do or feel unable to do is to go and actually talk with people who may be angry with us, but especially for representing Christ or trying to bring Christ into the public arena, and be able to engage them. We don't have to be as knowledgeable as him. I would hear him sometimes quote political figures, historical events that I wouldn't have ready at my fingertips. But we can still engage people and interact with them. And I think at the heart of all of that is courage. And I really think that's what a lot of the young people were doing, because what's happened in our culture is a lot of Christians are afraid to go out and say what they really believe in public because they know what the response will be. And I think he's an example of how to do that well. As you continue to think about this event, In his column, Al Mohler made it sound like that this event, I mean, he took the term turning point and used it in the title of his article. And he believes this could be a turning point in the history of our country. Now, that's a big statement to make, especially the day after this happened. None of us are prophets. But I would ask you, do you think this death is of that significance? And he noted other deaths that happened in our country, such as Martin Luther King Jr. Do you think it'll have that kind of impact on our country or not? And along with that question, there have been other times where people have died and it's created a huge response, on other sides of the aisle or in the other sides of the issues. You can think back to like the George Floyd incident or other things of that nature. How big an impact do you think all of this is going to have?
I mean, I think that's going to be hard to say. And I think only time will bear it out. What I see is it's going to be a moment, I think, for the younger generation. They'll remember this, and particularly those of a certain political bent, obviously. But I do think that it will steel harden their resolve. And I do think you're going to see people speak out even louder about their beliefs and take a firm stand, kind of try to take up the post that Charlie left. But who can tell? It sometimes you think major things are going to shake up the world, and sometimes it's just they just kind of go by the wayside, and you never can tell. But what I would say is, I don't think this is necessarily a turning point. This particular event, I think the events of probably the past 2 or 3 weeks have all been a culmination of turning point or maybe a shift in our culture and really a need to take a fresh look at things. I mean, we had the shooting where the transgender boy went in and shot kids at the Catholic school. You had the stabbing on a train, Ukrainian immigrant stabbed to death on a train by somebody who, by looking at the criminal history, should have been in prison. And then you have this. So, I mean, I think when you take all of these things, I don't think it's necessarily one thing in particular that's really turning things. But I do think that this will be a marked time in history. And how it goes from here, I don't know. But I do think we'll look back at this time and say, this is when things change, whether it's for the better, for the worse, I don't know.
You know, I think I agree with what Scott is saying. I think that from what I see and even what I experience for myself, I think the last couple of weeks are a bit of a turning point, and people, the internet slang would be red pilled, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of having your eyes open to kind of the reality of what's going on out there. You know, I know it's not the subject of today's episode, but you know, the Charlie Kirk assassination follows on that horrid video of a young woman being stabbed to death on a train, which that triggers something, I think, in most men. God's wired us to be protective and to just, as a dad of four daughters, you can't watch something like that and not in a sense be like something, for like Scott said, for all accounts, that guy should have been in jail. But the policies and the social changes that resulted from BLM and all of those things and the leftists garbage is what has allowed that man to be free. And I think people are, I do think there's going to be a turning point. I think it's going to be significant. I think some of it's going to hinge on finding the assassin, knowing motive. You know, I know that just hours ago, again, this was publicly released, but the ammo that has been found at the Charlie Kirk assassination bore transgendered language. I think if some of those pieces fall into place, I do think it's going to be a significant turning point.
So I don't disagree with you, but what I can see happening too, though, is a real sharp divide. I mean, you talked about the red pill. The opposite is obviously the blue pill, right? If you're referring to the Matrix, right? But there are some.
Good job, Scott. You got the reference.
Thank you. I don't think you did. But, there are some, I think, that this will embolden them as well. And you see that in the mockery and the derision of some of the people celebrating this heinous act. They'll decry, somebody like a George Floyd. We've mentioned him. Right or wrong, they'll decry that, but they'll celebrate this. And, if you look at the lifestyles of those two, they are vastly different. So my fear is, Kyle, to get back on point, is that I see this as a turning point, but there could be a real sharp divide. And my prayer is that the nation will not be torn apart even more so than it is now.
Yeah, I think, I'm not saying the turning point is necessarily going to be good in all cases. I do think, I'm not a prophet or the son of a prophet, there's a lot of talk about this is going to radicalize a lot of young people and especially young men. And I'll put radicalize in quotes because, well, what does that mean? How do you define that? Mm-hmm. But I do think that we do need to very seriously think through the reality of that. A hero of many young men was just assassinated. And we're going to find out the reasons, Lord willing, and the motives for that. And I think, we are really going to need to, at least in the church, teach our young men how to be angry and not sin. We're going to need to teach them how not to be taken captive by empty philosophies that are not according to Christ, and find a way to kind of turn that and turn the energy and the zeal, I think, in a godly direction. And, is the church prepared for that? I don't know.
Well, you actually are leading me into our last question, Kyle, because I had over last night, it was already pre-planned, a family with two teenagers in it. And it was obvious that they were really, they were grieving, much like Scott said his children were, and trying to process this. And my question is how do we help? Especially I think about the young people, the young adults in our ministries and where we have opportunity to influence them. How do we help them? You said to be angry and not sin. I agree. But what would be some ways that we could go about helping them to, anger, obviously, it's a God-given emotion against injustice. And we're seeing a lot of injustice. You mentioned it. This Charlotte subway murderer, justice wasn't served previously. And so now a young lady's life was taken, or, will justice be served in this situation? So we see a lot of injustice out there. How do we take the anger, maybe even the anger within the church, the anger we'll see from other people? How do we help people process and direct it toward proper outworkings?
My mind, because I was thinking about this, how should we as a church respond? What should we be doing? I think, I don't think it's wrong to start praying imprecatory prayers against the wickedness that is in our world and those who espouse it most vocally. The Psalms are a fantastic place to go to deal, and we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. A fantastic place to go to learn how to deal with your emotions, yes, and how to channel them properly. I don't think it would be wrong to instruct our young men to read through the imprecatory Psalms, because it's not us. Like, if we go out and match violence with violence, it's not going to achieve what we want. The anger of man does not achieve the purposes of God. But we need to watch the Lord's hand at work and be used by the Lord when he calls us to, but watch the Lord at work and watch him bring down these false idols, these ivory towers of wicked thought. He will bring them down. It's sad to say, and I hate to say this, but a lot of this is God's judgment on us as a people. We have turned our back on him. And, you think of the prophets of old and what they did to them. And please don't think I'm calling Charlie Kirk a prophet, all right? But the fact of the matter is, we have always had, there's always been people to mock, to scourge, to kill those who will speak the truth. And we need to point our kids and our young people to that. Look, this is what happens when you stand up for the Lord. Don't get angry, stand up for the Lord. And, you know, whatever the cost is, you have to stand up for the Lord.
Yeah, Barry, this is a million-dollar question that we probably don't have time to fully engage at the moment. But, you know, I think that our young people need to take moments like this. We all need to take moments like this to be reminded what the divide is between us and the world. And, you know, as Christians, our end goal is not to take things by force. Our end goal is not to take to the streets and start riots, which I don't think is going to happen. That's not going to be the turning point that happens here in light of this situation. But we do need a profound awareness that Christ was serious when he said the world is going to hate you, but we are to have no fear because he's overcome the world. And I don't mean that in a cheap Christian cliche way. You know, I think some people could just roll their eyes and be like, that's what Christians are always about. But what, you know, what's the real boots on the ground answer? And that's the real boots on the ground answer. We are not of this world, and there is a divide. And the Lord Jesus has given us as individual Christians, and he's given the church collectively, the marching orders for how you march through a world to which you don't belong. And I think we need to bring it back to that. You know, again, I think, Scott, you mentioned it earlier. You know, Charlie Kirk is going to be a man that is remembered for many things. But if you take his words at face value, what he wanted to be remembered for was his faith. And I think that as those ministering to young men in this world, to actually just say, yeah, that's the right answer, right? Hebrews 11, to be a man of whom this world is not worthy, is to be a man of faith. That doesn't mean to privatize it, you know, be a lion, go out into the public sphere with your faith and be courageous. But I think all that to say, we need to lean into the divide that exists between us and the world. And I don't think at the end of the day, it's rocket science. Christ has told us, I've overcome the world, and this is what it looks like then for you to live in this world.
That's helpful. Back when 9/11 struck in 2001, as it called for prayer that night at our church, I turned to Psalm 37 for help because it talks about the wicked and how we're to respond to it. And a part of that psalm, beginning with verse 8, refrain from anger and forsake wrath, fret not yourself, it tends only to evil, for the evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord shall inherit the land. And I think we need to guide our people, you know, vengeance is the Lord, it's not ours, and so we can't respond in vengeance, but we know the God who can. And to go to him and to pray and to pour our hearts out with the imprecatory prayers. We did that in chapel today at the RPTS, and Dr. Whitla led us through Psalm 12, which was very helpful in praying through. We need to really ask the Lord to turn the hearts and save our nation from all this evil and violence. I think I was just before this podcast out in my yard. Got home a little early today, and my grandsons are here being watched, and they wanted to play croquet, and just the peacefulness of, the relative peacefulness of playing croquet with your grandsons because they want to win. But, you know, just seeing my grandsons, and I don't want them to grow up in a land where just bloodshed is so common. And I want them to grow up in a land where Christ is known, where his word reigns supreme. And if we had more time, but we need to stop. I think in many ways, we in the Reformed Presbyterian Church talk about the mediatorial kingship of Christ and its outworking in the civil realm. And yet we don't often do a great job of showing what that looks like. I think Charlie Kirk, at least in part, shows what it's like to go out and take Christ's kingdom into this world. And we need to, I think, in direct the energies, especially of our young people, to think about how important it is to be representing the gospel publicly, to be discipled in the church, to be faithful witnesses to the Lord, because that's what you both have just said, is that's what he wanted to be known for, and to help our young people take anger and find out ways to, by God's help, to turn that into courageous witness is just a courageous and loving witness is so important. Well, we're glad you joined us. We hope perhaps that this episode will be somewhat helpful in processing the events of our day. Obviously, it's a time for you to be with other Christians in your local church praying and seeking counsel from your elders. And so we encourage you along those lines. But we're thankful that you joined us and listening to this episode. If you'd like to hear more or learn more about 3GT, you can go over to our website, 3GT.xyz. We'd love to hear from you. So please write us at 3GT.xyz@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and hope to have you with us next time.